Now, most of us probably like the idea of being rescued. But we're less comfortable with the idea that we need rescuing, aren't we? Remember when the last two holidays, me and Nikki have been on, we've broken down at the same place, literally in the same town on holiday each time. And it was a relief that someone rescued us. But I didn't like being in the position of needing someone to rescue us. And I'm praying that as we go on holiday tomorrow, we won't be in the same position with our where we need rescuing. But we're less comfortable with the idea that we need rescuing. Because if you're anything like me, you probably think you're capable of facing most difficult circumstances. Just give me enough time, give me enough information, and I'll be determined enough to find a way through. And I think that approach works for most things in ordinary life. It's a good approach to have. But what happens when you're not able to fix that problem? What happens when you can't undo what's happened, when you can't repay what is owed, or you can't secure the future for yourself? That's when you don't just need advice, you need a redeemer. And in the Old Testament world, a redeemer was not simply someone who offered sympathy from a distance, but a guardian redeemer was a close relative who had the right, the resources, and the willingness to step into a family crisis. You see, if poverty had forced a family to lose everything, or lose its land, or lose, as in Naomi's case, lose a husband and sons, the redeemer was in a position, if they were in a position, were able to buy that family back. If they'd become defenseless, the Redeemer was able to protect it. If their inheritance and future was in danger of disappearing, the Redeemer could accept the responsibility and preserve that family line. You see, what a Redeemer does, it enters into a problem that is not originally its own, and it pays for that problem and solves that problem. It comes in and rescues them from that problem. And of course, that's what we see, exactly what Ruth and Naomi need. They've experienced some relief in chapter 2. We've seen that food has been given. She's been able to go to the harvest fields and harvest some of the food, so they've got enough grain to eat. But food is not the same as the full future being secured. Because they may have some food, but they're still widows. They're still vulnerable. They're still in need. They're economically and socially vulnerable. And Ruth can work hard, but what she's not able to do is she's not able to restore the family inheritance. And Ruth has worked hard. She is such an example of a godly woman. She's worked hard, but there's some things that she just can't do. She's not in the position to do that. She can't redeem herself or Naomi. And that's the position that we're in. We can't buy back the price that it costs for us to be redeemed by God, for all the terrible things that we've done. We try to redeem ourselves through many different ways. And these are some of the ways that I have tried to think that I can buy myself back from the problems that I'm in. If I just succeed enough, perhaps I will prove to people that I matter. Does anyone try and do that? If I just... Maybe it's through relationships. If that person chooses me, perhaps I will finally be valuable and feel valuable. Maybe it's through control. If I can manage every detail, perhaps I can make myself safe. Maybe we try to redeem ourselves through regret and self-punishment. I think we're all guilty of that. If I just carry this guilt for long enough, if I just put up with it long enough, I can somehow pay back for what I've done. And I think that if you've been in church life for any period of time, sometimes we try and redeem ourselves through religion. If I just serve enough, if I just pray enough, if I just become good enough, perhaps God will accept me. But sadly, you can't redeem yourself from proving yourself to others. You can't redeem yourself by hiding from your failures. You can't redeem yourself by controlling other things or other people or punishing yourself. You can't work hard enough to remove any guilt of things that you've done. You can't make yourself righteous enough. It's not because effort doesn't matter. Of course, effort has value and it's important. Ruth was one of the hardest working people you're going to see in the Bible, but this chapter shows us that there's a limit to what work can do to accomplish what we need. Sometimes there's a moment when we must stop gathering, or she must stop gathering from the Redeemer's field and just come to the feet of the Redeemer himself. And that's what she does. And this is a really unusual chapter. It's kind of a little bit of a it sounds quite random what's going on if we don't understand the context. But Naomi tells Ruth to go and wash herself, change her clothes, put on a little bit of perfume, make yourself smell nice, go to the threshing floor at night and wait for Boaz until he's asleep and then uncover his feet when he lies down. A little bit random, isn't it? Very, very random. It's a very provocative thing to do, and we'll look at that in a little bit. But as Boaz wakes up, he says, "Who are you?" And Ruth replies, "I'm your servant. Spread the corner of your garment over me, since you are a garden redeemer of our family." In other words, I can't secure the future for myself. Will you take responsibility for me? And then everything stands and falls on what this redeemer is like. Is Boaz a good redeemer? Is he a good guy? Or is he going to exploit her in some way? I think as we've read in 3, we know the answer to that. Everything depends upon Boaz's response. And I think that the question of Ruth 3 that it asks us is, what kind of redeemer is Boaz? Can he be trusted? And we all need redeeming. We all need to come to the foot of the Redeemer, Jesus Christ. Can he be trusted? Do we trust him? And so we have 3 reasons to rejoice from this chapter, I believe. There's probably a lot more, but I'm going to pick 3 rather than 6 like I did last week, because I want to spend a bit of time on these. So number 1, the first thing that we see, God provides the Redeemer that we could never provide for ourselves. Simply that, God provides the Redeemer that we could never provide for ourselves. We're in verses 1 to 9 here. Look what she says. Naomi says to Ruth, "My daughter, I must find a home for you where you'll be provided for." What a good mother-in-law. What a great mother-in-law. Has everyone got mother-in-laws like that? Anyway, this is a good mother-in-law. And the word here, home, where she says, "I must find a home for you," is actually translated to the word rest. Rest. See, Naomi's not simply talking about physical rest or relaxation. She's talking about, I need to find you belonging, protection, and a settled future. That's my goal. I want to find you those things. Ruth's been working hard in the fields. She's been provided food, and she's provided food for Naomi, but she can't redeem her family no matter how hard she works. But God has already placed a redeemer in the story. The narrator has put that out there already. There's a Boaz that happens to be the guardian redeemer. There's a Boaz that happens to be very wealthy. There's a Boaz that happens to have a very, very good field with lots of food in it. God is already at work within the story and has placed the redeemer there, even if they can't see it yet. And Boaz doesn't appear because Ruth developed the perfect plan. He's there because God has placed him there. He's already possessed the resources and the standing to help Ruth and Naomi, even before Ruth and Naomi can fully understand it. And we saw this last week when we focused on providence, this idea that how God works out, that he's in control, and how he actually works that out in our day-to-day lives. But even when we don't see him working, he is at work. He's not idle. And I think that's a truth I want to reiterate today, is God is at work even when we can't see it. Even when we don't know that he's doing it, he is at work. He's never not at work. He's always at work in our lives. Ruth and Naomi can't see it at this point, but God is at work. And Naomi tells Ruth to go and wash, put on perfume, make yourself look nice, go to the threshing floor, which was this open area where grain was separated from the husk. When the wind would come in, it would take the chaff, and the chaff would go away, and the wheat would remain. And it was so valuable that Boaz, who owned the land, would lie by it so that no one would come and steal it. And Ruth's visit is so risky. Actually, this is in scripture, this would be seen as quite a sexualized act to go and do. Even though that's not her motive at all in this, but that's what it would be seen as. which is why they have this thing of like, go away in the dark, don't let, or in the first light, don't let anybody see you. But Ruth was a foreign widow approaching a wealthy, respected man while he sleeps. Her reputation was at risk. His reputation was at risk. Her safety was at risk. Going there at that time of night was dangerous because lots of stuff happened at the threshing floor. It was a place of where sexual activity would happen. And yet, she goes, and when Boaz wakes, she says, spread the corner of your garment over me, since you are a guardian redeemer. She's asking Boaz to marry her. It's incredible. Like, even in today's day and age, it's rare that that happens, isn't it? But back then, this would have been scandalous. It's incredible. She's saying, will you please accept responsibility for my family's future? She's admitting that I can't do this for myself. She's placing her need and her hope before this godly man. She is expressing faith. Not pretending that she doesn't have a need. Not pretending that she can manage everything. She's coming to a place of recognizing the end of her own self-reliance. And she's got to take a step of faith. I need someone to do this for me that I cannot do for myself. And guys, this is where the beauty of the gospel begins, isn't it? What we've said already, this is where we're not really people that just need a little bit of encouragement or spiritual encouragement. We are a people that are in need of redeeming, being brought back from our sin, being reconciled to God, being forgiven for our sin, being rescued from sin and death. And we can't sort that out ourselves. God has provided a redeemer for us. The gospel isn't that we suddenly found our way back to God. The gospel is that God sent Jesus down so we could find our way back to God. Jesus did not wait for us to become strong enough. He didn't come to us so we could repair ourselves. He entered our world, took on human flesh. He came to save us. So I just want you to, on the back of your sheets, there's a question for each, there's like a reflection question for each of the points that we're doing today. Spoiler alert, they're all on there. So if you've been making notes, I apologise, but the key things are there, but do make notes as well. Where are you exhausting yourself trying to find rest where only Jesus can give you true rest? Where are you exhausting yourself trying to find true rest where only Jesus can give you that true rest? Some of the things I said earlier, is it through your work we're trying to prove ourselves? Through our success? Is it through trying to be a better person? In the eyes of other people, they see you as a good person? Are you trying to earn your acceptance to God through religious activity? How often you're on a rota, or how often you come to things. Not bad things, but done with the wrong motive. Done in a way of exhaustion, of a way of trying to work yourself, trying to find something that will redeem you, that will buy you back from what's going on in your life. Only Jesus can do that. And that's why many people's stories of testimonies of how they came to faith was that they realized they were empty. And they tried to fill it with various different things. Success, relationships, whatever it may be. And yet it left them more empty. My story. The only thing that could fill them was recognizing they couldn't buy themselves back. Only Jesus can do that. The good news is that God has not left you to redeem yourself. He has provided Jesus. Secondly, second point, the second joy from this passage, I believe, is that the Redeemer can be trusted with our vulnerability. Verses 9 to 15. It's really interesting. She says, spread the corner of your garment over me. And that word corner, another word for that, can also mean wing. And if you were here last week, it connects directly to what Boaz said a prayer over Ruth last week, which was, may you be richly rewarded by the Lord, the God of Israel, whose wings you have come to take refuge. Boaz said, Ruth, you've come under God's wing. Now Ruth's saying, spread your wing over me. She's asking Boaz to become part of the solution or the answer to his own prayer that he just prayed. We saw a little bit of that last week. We talked about that last week a little bit. But it's also, what a moment of vulnerability that Ruth has displayed there. She's placed herself at Boaz's feet. She has named her need, and she's entrusted her future to his response. And everything now depends upon the Boaz, the Redeemer's character. He's got more wealth, more social standing, more power, and he could shame her, he could say no, he could send her away, he could do all sorts of things, but instead his first words are, the Lord bless you, my daughter. And isn't that so true of Boaz? We saw last week, the first words that he says to his workers are, the Lord bless you. Every word that comes out of his mouth is a word from, is a word of blessing from the Lord, isn't it? It's, the Lord bless you, the Lord bless you, the Lord bless you. What a man. He blesses rather than humiliates her. And then he says, don't be afraid. So he's reassuring her. He tells her, all the people of the town know what a woman of noble character you are. He doesn't define her by her being a vulnerable widow, a foreigner. He sees her as a faithful, honored, worthy woman. And he protects her. He doesn't take sexual advantage over her. Keeps her till morning and then says, go. I don't want you to travel in the dark. Go first light before anyone else is up. Boaz uses his strength to make Ruth safer. And there's a word that is carried throughout the book of Ruth. It's the word hest in the Hebrew. And it's often translated as loving kindness, steadfast love, faithful love. And we see this word used repeatedly through the whole book of Ruth. But it means more than just being kind. It means it's a love that binds itself to another person and then acts for their good. Not just affection, it's not just compassion. It's a loyal love that refuses to walk away no matter what the cost, the personal cost. It's a love that takes full responsibility. It uses whatever strength or position or resources to bring protection and provision for another person. We saw it in chapter 1 when Naomi says, she shows this hest, this loving kindness, this steadfast love, when she says, I'm going to come with you, Naomi, to a land that I don't know. I'm going to leave my family behind. I'm going to come with you. And in chapter 2, Boaz then shows this hest, this loving kindness, this steadfast love, this faithful love, when he provides food, protection, and dignity to her. And then here in chapter 3, we see it again. He describes Ruth's actions in that way. The kindness is even greater than that which you showed earlier. It's even greater than the loyalty that you've shown to your mother-in-law. Your kindness to come to me and ask this question when there's a younger kinsman redeemer that could do it, you come to me first. And then Boaz responds with steadfast love, loving kindness, this hest. He protects her, he keeps her. He says, I'm not going to abandon you. So he shows us that godly love does not separate the right goal from the right means. He shows us that although there's someone younger that she could go to, that he's honest enough to say, look, there is somebody else that is better, that is actually technically better placed than me to do this, but I will go and sort it out. He doesn't try and deceive the situation. He doesn't try and say, oh, I'm just going to take her, I'm going to marry her. She's a younger woman, brilliant. He's like, no, I need to go to the person that is actually the one that's in the one that's legally in the better position to do it. And this is where Boaz points us so strikingly to our great Redeemer, Jesus. Because many people were afraid to come honestly to Christ, vulnerably. We're afraid to come to him, fear that he will know the truth about us. We hide our vulnerability. We confessed something that we've been shamed before. We've trusted someone that's betrayed us. We've shown weakness and been exploited. So we assume that Jesus is going to receive us in the same way when we come to his feet. But he won't. He won't exploit us. He's not shocked. He knows everything that we've ever done and ever will do. And he welcomes sinners like you and me. He receives the ashamed. He protects the weak. And he will not crush us. At the cross, Jesus didn't use his power to save himself. He used his position and his power to save us. Isn't that amazing? He bears our sin. He carries our shame. He lays down his life. And he gives us that full sense of what hest, faithful, loving, kindness really looks like in its fullness. Question for you to think about. What are you afraid of bringing honestly to Jesus because you are still uncertain about how he will receive you? On Christianity Explored course, week 6 is grace. So you work your way up. You look at what's the good news of Jesus Christ? Why is he good news? Who's his identity? Who is he? You look at sin, what's our problem? You look at the cross, how we solve it, the resurrection, how Jesus defeats death, and then you get to grace. And just this past week, I was on that week with someone that me and Christine are doing Christianity Explored with. And in the past when I've done this, I've had a number of people say to me, they get to that point, and they're like, that's the bit I don't get. You're like, really? So you understand sinful? You need the cross, you need Jesus, you need the resurrection because then Jesus defeated death so that you can too also defeat death. And then you get to grace, which is, do I deserve this? Well, no, you don't deserve it, but that's the whole point. And so many people get to that point and they're like, I can't accept that. All the things that I've done, all those things that I've done, surely I've got to do something. Surely there's even one little thing I can do. And that's heartbreaking, isn't it? But I think sometimes, even as Christians, if you've been a Christian 1 year, 2 years, 5 years, 20 years, sometimes we still think and we still work as if I can't bring certain things to you, Jesus, because they're just utterly too bad. I can't be vulnerable. Can't sit at your feet and just be vulnerable and let everything out. And I want us just to pause for a moment now and have an honest reflection with ourselves. Where's that been true of you recently in your life, in your relationship with Jesus? The Redeemer that allows you to be fully vulnerable because he has shown that hest, that loving kindness, steadfast love. He's never let us down. He's not exploited us in any way. And he wants us to come to him with all our vulnerability, and he will carry that. I want to give you just 1 minute now, just to quietly amongst yourselves, just think, where have I not honestly brought something to you, Jesus? Because I'm not really sure about that I can. Spend a moment doing that. Can I just encourage us that whenever we think there's something too rotten in our lives that we can't take to Jesus, we go and look at the character of Jesus. That in his position as God on earth, lowered himself as a servant, spent time with sinners like you and I, all so that we can come to him with all our issues and all our problems and all our guilt and all our shame. Nothing is too messed up for him. We don't need to clean ourselves up before coming to him. We don't need to produce a more respectable version of ourselves. We do it with each other, don't we? We're confessing, but it's like it's PG-13 version of that, isn't it? And sometimes that's good, but other times we just need to let out what's going on, and we can do that with Jesus because he will not tell anybody else. He will not mess up. He won't make us feel bad. He'll encourage us to come and receive forgiveness. The third joy we can take from this passage is the Redeemer takes responsibility and completes the work in verses 16 to 18. The Redeemer takes responsibility and completes the work. So Ruth leaves. Boaz gives her some food on her way. What a guy. He tells her not to return to Naomi empty-handed. And that matters because, as we saw in chapter 1, Naomi has come back empty. She's not been fully redeemed yet. The family line has not been fully redeemed yet. But she is being given provision from the Redeemer. It's not fully resolved, but Naomi is no longer empty. The barley is provision for the present and a pledge concerning the future. It says, I've heard you, I've not forgotten you, and I've begun to act. And then Naomi says, wait, my daughter, until you find out what happens, for the man will not rest until the matter is settled today. What a climax to this chapter. Naomi is seeking rest for Ruth. And at the end of this chapter, Ruth can rest because the Redeemer's not going to rest on her behalf. We have a Redeemer that will not rest. In fact, when he went to the cross, what did he say? It is finished. He didn't rest until it was finished. And he went through an absolute torture getting there. And yet he wouldn't rest until he had sought out our future. Isn't that amazing? See, sometimes in the waiting, as something's being sorted out, sometimes we have to take faithful steps like we see Ruth doing this. She went and got food in a dangerous place. She went and was willing to do that. But sometimes in the waiting, like we have to get to a point where there's no more we can do, and obedience actually looks like stopping and resting at the feet of Jesus and just saying, oh, I can't do it. There's nothing else I can do now. Unless you show me the way, Lord, there's nothing else I can do. Now you have to do the work. And I don't know about you, but sometimes there's circumstances in life that you get to where you think, there's nothing else I can do now. God, you are going to have to move because literally I cannot work out any more circumstances. You have got to do it. And maybe you're at that space at the moment. In a place where you're like trying to think, what can I do next? What can I do? What would it look like if I did something next? And maybe the place you need to get to is just waiting for the Redeemer to work, for God to move, for him to do something. Doesn't mean we stop praying. In fact, it means we get on our hands and knees and we pray even more. But the great news is our salvation doesn't depend on us. The joy is that we have a Redeemer that takes responsibility and completes the work, and he has completed the work for us. The work has been done so that we can truly find a home and truly find rest. Our security is in heaven. Our security is in God alone. Our hope is in him. He has done it. It is finished. We're not in the waiting. We're in the waiting in the sense we're waiting for Jesus to return, but we're in the now, and we get to live out our eternity now because it is finished. Our sin has been defeated. But when you get to Tuesday morning, sometimes it feels like anything but sin has been defeated because you're back in it. But it has been defeated. It is finished once and for all. So where do you need to go to the Redeemer's feet and come underneath his wings? What area of your life at the moment are you really finding difficult to trust God with? And where do you just need to go and take it to him? Because often we're afraid to take it to him because we think that means it's over to him and I can't do anything. But that is the best place to be. That is the best place to be. I've completely gone off from my notes. But I just feel like I need to stop there. But there is joy that we can have, guys. There is joy that we can live out today knowing that God provides the Redeemer that we could never provide for ourselves. That the Redeemer can be trusted with our vulnerability. There's nothing that we can't bring to him. There's nothing too dirty or awful that we can't bring to him and that he can't deal with. And the Redeemer takes responsibility to complete the work. It is finished. Say to the person next to you, it is finished. It is finished. And the sermon, it is finished. And so, you look very excited that it's finished there, Lawrence. He's like, yes, thank goodness. Right, let's stand together. Let's stand together. And let's worship the Lord. There's a beautiful song, we've sung it several years ago by City of Light, that's called Jesus Strong and Kind. That is Hest. That's what he is. But also there's a beauty in the fact that now, although we can't buy people back like Jesus can, we can show loving kindness, steadfast love and faithfulness to others and point them to Jesus in some way. I'd encourage you to be thinking about how can you be doing that this week? Who to? How can we reach out to those that need to know of the loving Hest that Jesus offers? Let's stand and worship.